You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's largest mortgage lender. Spring will be here soon, so if buying a new home is on your to-do list, right now is the time to call Quicken Loans. Learn about which mortgage options make sense for you and get a jump on your competition. With our exclusive Rate Shield approval, the low rate you lock today is protected for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. With a Rate Shield approval, if rates go up, your low rate stays locked. But if rates go down, you get that new, even lower rate. Either way, you win. Talk to us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com to take advantage. Here's another great reason to work with us. For a record 9 years in a row, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Again, to lock in today's low mortgage interest rate and get the security of our exclusive Rate Shield approval, call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for the new Sesame Ginger Glazed Chicken Signature Wrap. How would you like it?
I'll take a...
Sports announcer at home?
Yeah, how'd you...
We just know.
My wife picks up the new Signature Wrap. It's got double the rotisserie-style chicken mixed with a sesame ginger glaze. She appears annoyed at me, but she shrugs it off. Those sweet and savory flavors are calling her name. She lifts the wrap and... She takes the bite! Incredible! And now she's closing the door on my... Subway, make it what you want.
Limited time only at participating restaurants. Double meat basement, average 6-inch sub.
I'm Little Teapot, short and stout.
Here is my handle and here is my spout.
No, Dad, like this. When I get all steamed up, then I shout, tip me over and
tip pull me out.
This is WWE superstar Roman Reigns. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today.
Visit fatherhood.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
The following
It's time now for the
coarse language and adult themes. Listener discretion is advised.
It's time now for the Conservative Curmudgeon Radio Show. Now, here's Grouchy.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome back. It is Wednesday night on KLRN Radio, America's podcast network. I am your leadoff man, the Grouch, and we got a lot to talk about tonight. I am, as usual, overprepared. Maybe not always overprepared these days, but usually more often than not, still overprepared. As I am tonight. So I'm going to be moving kind of quick. I hope we can get to everything. Coming up after me, The Red Wine, followed by Amish and Robinson, and then America Off the Rails, assuming that Rick is still conscious. And we got this little thing that I made a mention of the other day in a DM on Twitter. But this week marks 7 years of doing this show. 7 years, Rick.
I know. I'm surprised. I'm surprised we haven't murdered each other yet.
I mean, what the hell? 7 years.
Lucky number seven, baby.
Okay. We'll go with that. I'm an optimist, usually. A pragmatic optimist, but, you know. Anyway, Just worth bringing up. 7 years. 7 years. I don't know. It's all good. It's all good. I've had a lot of fun. A lot of fun along the way.
It kind of sounds like you're, from your voice tone, it sounds like you're regretting some of this last 7 years that we've spent together, sir.
I ain't going to lie. There's been a couple weeks where I was just like, Jesus Christ, I got to go do this show.
So what you're saying is you're about to leave me like my ex. That's what you're saying.
No. No.
I was about to say, I'm about to have some abandonment issues here for real, yo.
Oh, no. We're not going there. Not yet, anyway. Who knows? We'll see what time brings, but right now, we're good.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Don't worry about it. I might take a vacation sometime this year, but I'm not going anywhere. But anyway, you may remember back during the presidential campaigns, we heard a lot from the Democrats about what they thought were priorities with COVID and how they wanted to keep the kids home. And all of a sudden, right at election day, the left started to swerve the other way on schools and reopening, and they were really pushing for it. And all of a sudden it was like, where did this come from? You know, they fought forever to keep the schools closed. Biden gets elected, and then they go crazy talking about opening schools. And now Biden has once again, I guess we'll use the word defined, his position on the matter. President Joe Biden wants to open schools at least one day a week for a majority of students in the United States by April 30th. Are you friggin' serious? School here lets out a month after that. School here lets out before the Memorial Day weekend, excuse me. His goal that he has set, now this is per Jen Psaki, Psaki, Packy, Psaki, whatever the hell her name is. His goal is that he set is to have the majority of schools open, so more than 50% by day 100 of his presidency, she said. And that means some teaching in classrooms. Holy hell, really? The district I live in here, they opened on their normal first day in late August, and they have not shut down this year. And they take, you know, their normal schedule. You know, they have a break for Thanksgiving, a break for Christmas, and coming up on spring break here. And of course, here in Mardi Gras land, they build days in for the kids and teachers to have Mardi Gras off. There is no Mardi Gras this year to speak of. The only place I know of that's having a parade is in the county that I live in, and it's going to be very small, but it is the only parade, so I expect it will be very well attended by a lot of people. So, anyway, Mike in the chat room got a grouch picture up in there. I like that, Mike. Thanks. Oscar the Grouch. But anyway, so at least one day per week, she says, hopefully it's more. And obviously it is as much as is safe in each school and local district. This is the biggest crock of shit ever. They are going to screw kids over. There are going to be kids that get promoted to the next grade just out of sheer, it was a COVID year, so everybody, you know, was slacking and not doing this or doing that. So we're just passing everybody. As long as they try, right?
They're going to do the Oprah approach to grades. You get a 4.0. You get a 4.0. Oh, sorry.
It's going to be horrific, and it's going to wreck kids for years to come because they're not going to have the foundation that they need now to do well later in school. They're going to be behind the power curve. And it's a damn crime is what it is. It's a damn shame and it's a damn crime. And what they're doing to these kids. Asked to clarify what that would mean for teachers and in classroom instructions. She said teaching at least one day a week in the majority of schools by day 100. You know, the teachers unions, for the most part, I'm not going to say all of them, but the country's largest teachers unions, widely supported Biden in the 2020 election, they have opposed opening schools until their members have been fully vaccinated. And I heard, forgive me, I haven't done all the homework on this, but I heard that the Chicago Teachers Union is refusing to open the schools up until all the teachers and all the students are 100% vaccinated. How long do you think that's going to take?
Should be done around the second Tuesday of next week.
We'll see. We'll see, because even with Biden's so-called increase in vaccinations, you know, by the way, he said his goal was 1 million vaccinations a day. We had hit that before he took office. So way to go, Joe. That's setting the bar high. But these teachers unions, they're not real big on this. Let's see. American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten said that I'm on board with the goal, but I'm very concerned about this new variant. None of this is done in isolation, she said. Yes, let's scare the hell out of everybody some more. But Biden has continued to push for reopening schools in his first 100 days. It should be a national priority to get our kids back in school, even if it's just one day a week, right? Because that's great. So stupid. I mean, they're taking these damn kids on a roller coaster ride. They're robbing them of their education. And these wealthy, and I say wealthy teachers because compared to what a teacher makes here, what a teacher makes in Chicago, and they're demanding more money on top of the vaccination demands too, that should be criminal. It's absolutely real. The average teacher in Chicago makes 80 grand a year. The average teacher. Now, you say that's not a lot. That's what all teachers should make as an average. This is what Chicago gets for bullying their city around, because nobody's had the guts to castrate that bull and take its power away from it. It can be done. I've witnessed it be done. Anyway, the Biden administration staying at home. They had a plan to freeze deportations for 100 days. Oh, but that was just temporarily blocked by a federal judge in Texas over a lawsuit arguing The federal government can't make immigration enforcement changes without first consulting the state. District Judge Drew Tipton in Victoria, Texas, on Tuesday, extended by 2 weeks a temporary restraining order against the deportation pause that was set to expire. Texas has also requested a longer-lasting injunction that could block the plan during the entire litigation, with a hearing set for February 19th. The irreparable harm that would accrue to Texas if an extension of the TRO is not granted before consideration of its motion for a preliminary injunction is more substantial than any harm incurred by the defendants, Tipton wrote. The order did state, though, that the Biden administration argued that the 100-day pause on removals is necessary to allow them to take into account important immigration, foreign policy, and humanitarian considerations. The court may ultimately be persuaded by the defendants' arguments, but any harm they might incur between now and then does not outweigh the potential for irreparable harm to Texas, Tipton wrote. So you know this is going to be appealed. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton last month sued the Biden administration for its move to put a 100-day pause on deportations. Paxton's suit claims that Biden's administration would be violating an agreement it has with the Department of Homeland Security, and would require at least a 180-day notice as well as consultation prior to implementing the changes in immigration policy. Now, President Biden has pledged to move forward with a deportation moratorium, which took effect Friday as his administration resets his approach towards immigration. Non-citizens have engaged in or who are suspected to have engaged in terrorism and espionage can still be deported. Well, that's nice to know. But killing somebody, no, you can't deport them. I mean, God forbid we should deport a killer. I mean, really. Anyway, that's what's going on with Texas, fighting back against the Biden administration, taking these executive orders to task, just like all these other states did to Trump with his. I think it's beautiful. I think it's great. And I think they should be challenged, especially when there's already agreements in place and they're violating that. So, you know, let's go. Where's Florida? Where's other conservative states getting involved in this stuff? Let's see the lawsuits filed. There's got to be plenty of these executive orders that are bullshit that can be challenged. Speaking of more bullshit that needs to be challenged, newly installed Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg has suggested the federal government is considering requiring a negative result from a COVID test to board a domestic passenger jet. You heard that right. Requiring a negative result to board a domestic passenger jet. There's an active conversation with CDC right now, Buttigieg said on Monday. What I can tell you is it's going to be guided by data and by science and by medicine and by the input of people who actually are going to have to carry this out. The suggestion made by a senior official at the CDC on January 26 had already drawn criticism from aircraft manufacturer Boeing, who said in a letter Friday that any such regulation would have far-ranging impacts. Imposing such a burden on the already financially beleaguered airline industry has the potential for severe unintended consequences that will ripple across the entire economy. And that's according to the company's commercial airplanes chief executive Stan Deal and chief airspace safety officer Michael Delaney. Several studies have said the risk of transmission on a plane is very low due to the downward airflow and their high-efficiency particulate filters. Now, negative tests are already required for international travelers arriving from foreign countries in order imposed by the CDC on January 12th. And I have no problem with requiring it from a foreign country. You have no idea what's being brought in from another country. So, you know, I don't mind that. I don't mind that at all. But we're talking about people inside of our country. We're talking about people that if you say you can't get on a plane, they're going to get in their car and they're going to spend 3 days driving across the country, maybe four, possibly more, making stops, exposing themselves to more people along the way, being exposed to more people along the way. Do they not see how stupid this is? Or do they just not care? Now, another blow to the left. New York state limits on religious gatherings in areas with high rates of COVID-19 infections were blocked by a federal judge in Brooklyn after the U.S. Supreme Court recently sided with churches and synagogues challenging such measures. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo had last year ordered limits on indoor prayer services to 10 people in areas where the virus was spreading fastest and to 25 people in other areas within hotspots. U.S. District Judge Kiyo Matsumoto, who had rejected an October lawsuit by Jewish leaders who claimed the restrictions were unconstitutional, reversed her decision Tuesday and issued a permanent injunction against the state. Now, rabbis, synagogue leaders, and National Orthodox Jewish group Agadeth Israel had argued in their suit that Cuomo was singling out Jews during their religious holidays. A second complaint by the Roman Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn argued the restrictions violated religious freedom rights and unfairly targeted churchgoers, even as the state permitted the operation of businesses deemed essential, including grocery stores and takeout restaurants. Now, in November, the U.S. Supreme Court sided with the Roman Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn and Orthodox Jewish synagogues. The High Court granted their request for a court order against enforcement of the limitations pending the outcome of a decision by the Federal Appeals Court in Manhattan, which sent the case back to Matsumoto on December 28th. In her decision Tuesday, Matsumoto said she previously allowed a preliminary halt to enforcement and was now ordering a permanent injunction. She also cited a February 5th Supreme Court ruling that ordered California to allow indoor worship services to resume for a group of churches that sued, easing restrictions that officials said were needed to stem the spread of coronavirus. So, yeah, I see a lot of people punching back against the left, and it doesn't even have to be Biden, okay? This had nothing to do with Biden. This is Cuomo. Punch back against these governors. Whitmer needs to be having her head handed to her as well. People need to be on this. You know, there are left-wing governors out there that have way overreached their authority during this pandemic. And it's time they get called for it. Absolutely time they get called for it. So, let's see. What's another big story? Oh, yeah. I bet you guys hadn't heard about this. And I don't know how they're keeping this quiet. Look, two professional football teams have already left New York for another state. Okay? Both the Jets and the Giants now play their games in New Jersey. But think about this. The New York Stock Exchange is talking about the possibility of leaving New York. Not just the city, the entire state. Why? Well, because the Empire State is proposing to impose a transfer tax on stock sales. In a Tuesday op-ed, New York Stock Exchange President Stacey Cunningham said she and 25 other representatives of New York's securities industry sent a letter to state legislative leaders warning against the unintended consequences of imposing such a tax. The New York Stock Exchange belongs in New York, Cunningham said. If Albany lawmakers get their way, however, the center of the global financial industry may need to find a new home. New York state lawmakers introduced a bill that would tax certain financial transactions. Although state revenue has suffered due to COVID-19 pandemic, the proposed new transaction tax seemed to have little support from Governor Cuomo or his officials. In January, State Budget Director Robert Mujica said a lot of ideas around such financial taxes haven't been fleshed out, according to a transcript by an official inside the New York State Division of Budget. A financial tax was proposed last year in New Jersey, where many exchanges host their servers. Mujica said exchanges quickly mobilized to temporarily move their employees and activity outside of the state. If we increase the tax like that, you mobilize people, potentially just move your transactions and your servers to just another part of the country where those taxes don't exist. Now, Mujica noted the pandemic had shown people can do business anywhere, and a New York Stock Exchange representative declined to comment further on Cunningham's article, but did say that it would not be the most difficult task to handle for the New York Stock Exchange to relocate. That, I can't even imagine the destruction that would be in New York City. Just the, you're talking about a ghost town, desolation. I don't even know where they would move. I mean, really. Yeah, good point, JC. JC in the chat room. I'm not even sure that's constitutional. Why would I have to pay a tax to New York to trade? I don't know. I don't know how it's all proposed and the details, but you can bet I'll be keeping an eye on this because I am definitely interested in seeing what happens with it. We're getting down to about the bottom of the hour. We still got a couple of big stories ahead of us. So I think what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and hit the button and get our refills and such like that. And when we come back, we're going to talk about another Biden boo-boo. And then we're going to talk about a huge story happening over in Europe. So do yourself a favor. Stay with us. We'll be back in about 3.5 or 4 minutes, something like that. I don't know.
7 years, he still doesn't know how long his breaks are.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not the government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call Liberty at 855-58-LIBERTY. Again, that's 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or you can check them out at libertyhealthshare.org. Again, that's libertyhealthshare.org.
My son was in the Army back during Desert Storm. But even then, he wanted an MBA. He looked at a dozen schools, but only one offered the online education and flexibility he needed while he was in a tent in Iraq, Grantham University. Turns out that Grantham's been delivering affordable, relevant college and advanced degrees for over 65 years. Heck, if they can deliver a quality education to a soldier in a tent overseas, think about the flexibility Grantham can offer you so you can earn your degree too. It doesn't matter how complicated or full your life is, if getting a degree is on your bucket list, you'll want to do what my son did. You'll want to call Grantham. Find out how easy it is to get started on your education so you can check that college degree off your bucket list. Call Grantham right now. 800-910-1370. That's 800-910-1370. Flexible, affordable, relevant. Call 800-910-1370.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-7602 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-7602 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-516-7602. That's 1-800-516-7602. Again, 1-800-516-7602.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-783-0810 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-783-0810. Again, that's 800-783-0810.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the best bumper music in the business. I also have the best theme music in the business, but, you know, not to toot my own horn. Toot! But anyway, programming reminder, Red Wine coming up top of the hour, Amish and Robinson after that, and America Off the Rails after that. It is Wednesday night on KLRN Radio, America's podcast network, your home for the Grand Slam of grassroots conservative talk radio. Now, as promised, another Biden faux pas. We talked about this a little bit last week, but this is a whole different angle. President Joe Biden's cancellation of the permit for the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline in the name of curbing climate change will cause an enormous amount of CO2 to be released into the atmosphere. This is according to the Energy Equipment and Infrastructure Alliance. Because just because we don't have the pipeline doesn't mean we're still not doing oil business with Canada, right? Well, that oil is now going to travel by diesel-fueled trains to U.S. refineries at the Gulf of Mexico. We've all heard about the thousands of jobs that will be lost and have been lost already with the cancellation of the pipeline. But a little basic math reveals that Biden's Keystone decision will increase carbon emissions equal to putting nearly 500,000 more cars on the road. Now, yes, faux pas is French for fuck up. That is correct, Mike. You are on the ball. All right, so Biden's January 20th executive order states the following. Section 6, revoking the March 2019 permit for the Keystone XL pipeline. On March 29th, 2019, the president granted to TransCanada Keystone Pipeline LP a presidential permit to construct, connect, operate, and maintain pipeline facilities at the international border of the United States and Canada, subject to express conditions and potential revocation in the president's sole discretion. A permit is hereby revoked in accordance with Article 1 of the permit. According to his campaign website, Biden's climate change plan would, quote unquote, ensure the U.S. achieves a 100% clean energy economy and reaches net zero emissions no later than 2050. All right, now, here comes the good stuff. An analysis by the Energy Supply Chain Group, Energy Equipment and Infrastructure Alliance, does the math about what not completing the Keystone XL pipeline is going to mean for carbon emissions. Here's how CO2 numbers are calculated. According to the Association of American Railroads, it requires 433 gallons of locomotive diesel fuel to pull one loaded crude oil tank car from the Canadian oil sands to the United States Gulf Coast, approximately 2,200 miles. It takes another 144 gallons to bring the empty tank car back for a refill. That is 577 gallons total. It takes 645 loaded tank cars per day to transport the amount of oil that the Keystone XL might have carried, approximately 400,000 barrels per day. That is 235,425 tank car loads per year, multiplied by 577 gallons each, that amounts to about 136 million gallons of diesel burned per year. Since each gallon of diesel emits 22.44 pounds of CO2, that means the locomotives pulling these trains will emit over 1.5 million tons of CO2. That's all net addition to CO2 emissions since Keystone XL would have been powered entirely by renewable energy. You see where this is going, folks? 1.5 million tons of CO2 is equivalent to the emissions of 490,000 additional cars on the roads in the United States. In a statement, EEIA CEO Toby Mack said, in the real world, Canadian oil will still travel from Alberta, Canada, to U.S. refineries on the Gulf Coast, but by railroad. We know that jobs will be lost. The administration said the pipeline was canceled to help the environment. So we ask the questions, what is the real impact on our carbon footprint? What's the impact on overall CO2 levels, said Mack. It's clear that politics and not a commitment to the environment dictated Biden's decision to cancel the Keystone XL pipeline. Ain't that some shit? Ain't that some shit? I mean, really. You didn't have to do any math, Rooster. I did all the math. I did all the math. All you had to do was soak it in. Now, the big story, we got to roll this because it's huge. And I tried to trim it down. I really did, but I needed to keep all the pertinent stuff in it. The threat, this is in Europe now, the threat is said to be existential. It fuels talks of secessionism. It gnaws at national unity. It abets Islamism, attacks France's intellectual and cultural heritage. The threat, according to France's president Emmanuel Macron, quote, certain social science theories entirely imported from the United States. French politicians, high-profile intellectuals, and journalists are warning that progressive American ideas, specifically on race, gender, and post-colonialism, are undermining their society. There's a battle to wage against an intellectual matrix from American universities, warned Macron's education minister. Emboldened by these comments, prominent intellectuals have banded together against what they regard as contamination by the out-of-control woke leftism of American campuses and its attendant cancel culture. Now, pitted against them is a younger, more diverse guard that considers these theories as tools to understanding the willful blind spots of an increasingly diverse nation that still recoils at the mention of race, has yet to come to terms with its colonial past, and often waves away the concerns of minorities as identity politics. Disputes that would have otherwise attracted little attention are now blown up in the news and social media. The new director of the Paris Opera, who said on Monday he wants to diversify its staff and ban blackface, has been attacked by the far-right leader, Marine Le Pen. But also in Le Mans, because though German, he had worked in Toronto and had soaked up American culture for 10 years. The publication this month of a book critical of racial studies by two veteran social scientists, Stéphane Baude and Gérard Naurier, fueled criticism from younger scholars and has received extensive news coverage. Naurier has said that race had become a bulldozer, crushing other subjects, adding in an email that its academic research in France was questionable because race is not recognized by the government and merely subjective data. The fierce French debate over a handful of academic disciplines on U.S. campuses may surprise those who have witnessed the gradual decline of American influence in many corners of the world. In some ways, it is a proxy fight over some of the most combustible issues in French society, including national identity and the sharing of power. In a nation where intellectuals still hold sway, the stakes are high. With its echoes of the American culture wars, the battle began inside French universities, but is being played out increasingly in the media. Politicians have been weighing in more and more, especially following a turbulent year during which a series of events called into question tenets of French society. Mass protests in France against police violence, inspired by the killing of George Floyd, challenged the official dismissal of race and systemic racism. A Me Too generation of feminists confronted both male power and older feminists. A widespread crackdown following a series of Islamist attacks raised questions about France's model of secularism and the integration of immigrants from its former colonies. You should probably look up what France's former colonies are. Yeah. The influx of immigration from the Muslim countries they're seeing is not from former colonies. Some saw the reach of American identity politics and social science theories some center-right lawmakers pressed for a parliamentary investigation into ideological excesses at universities and singled out guilty scholars on Twitter. Macron, who had shown little interest in these matters in the past, but has been courting the right ahead of elections next year, jumped in last June when he blamed universities for encouraging the ethnicization of the social question, amounting to breaking the republic in two. I was pleasantly astonished, said Natalie Heinrich, a sociologist who last month helped create an organization against decolonialism and identity politics, made up of established figures, many retired. The group has issued warnings about American-inspired social theories in major publications like Le Point and Le Figaro. For Mrs. Heinrich, last year's developments came on top of activism that brought foreign disputes over cultural appropriation and blackface to French universities. At the Sorbonne, activists prevented the staging of a play to protest the wearing of masks and dark makeup by white actors. Elsewhere, some well-known speakers were disinvited following student pressure. It was a series of incidents that was extremely traumatic to our community, and that fell under what is called cancel culture, Heinrich said. To others, the lashing out at perceived American influence revealed something else. A French establishment incapable of confronting a world in flux, so they say, especially at a time when the government's mishandling of the coronavirus pandemic has deepened the sense of decline of a once great power. They say it's the sign of a small, frightened republic, declining, provincializing, but which in the past and to this day believes it in its universal mission, and which thus seeks those responsible for its decline, said François Cousset. He's a self-proclaimed expert on American civilization at Paris Nanterre University. France has long laid claim to a national identity based on a common culture, fundamental rights, and core values like equality and liberty, rejecting diversity and multiculturalism. The French often see the United States as a factious society at war with itself, society at war with itself. But far from being American, many of the leading thinkers behind theories on gender, race, post-colonialism, and queer theory came from France, as well as the rest of Europe, South America, Africa, India. And this is per Anne Garetta, a French writer who teaches literature at universities in France and at Duke, which can be the same thing at times. It's an entire global world of ideas that circulate, she said. It just happens that campuses are the most cosmopolitan and most globalized at this point in history, are the American ones. The French state does not compile racial statistics, which is illegal, describing it as part of its commitment to universalism and treating all citizens equally under the law. Too many scholars on race, however, the reluctance is part of a long history of denying racism in France and the country's slave trading and colonial past. You know, I hear the same shit over here. Look, we know what the past is, okay? But the past is just that. Slave trading didn't end last year. It didn't end last decade. Right now in the United States, there are probably not more than a handful or two of people old enough to have remembered somebody that was at least at one point a slave in their life. Those are some very, very old people slavery has been gone for almost 200 years here. Now, were there some harmful effects of it? Yes. Can you get up and make something of yourself despite that? Yes, you can. I see it every day. It's all in choices. It's all in your choices. What's more French than the racial question in a country that was built around these questions? Said Mame Fatou Nyang, who divides her time between France and the United States, where she teaches French studies at Carnegie Mellon. Ms. Nyang has led a campaign to remove a fresco at France's National Assembly, which shows two black figures with fat red lips and bulging eyes. Her public views on race have made her a frequent target on social media, including one of the lawmakers who pressed for an investigation into ideological excesses at university. Papnier, a historian who led efforts to establish black studies in France, said it was no coincidence that the current wave of anti-American rhetoric began growing just as the first protests against racism and police violence took place last June. Folks, do you see what's going on? This is all driven by this quote-unquote cosmopolitan crowd, this learned group of people that can't simply just allow race to not be an issue. I like the idea that France doesn't collect racial data. I like that idea. I think the United States should get there. I would really like to see the United States stop collecting racial data. It's unimportant. It's absolutely unimportant. I don't know. I don't know what the hell we're going to do. We got a long way to go here. There's been a lot of damage done just in the last 2 weeks. And it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. I trimmed this back a bit. Like I said, there's a lot more to this story, and it goes on. I probably have another 5 to 7 pages of notes just on this one story, but suffice it to say, it's a huge problem, and it's not going away. It's spreading. There's going to come a time, folks, we're going to have to really put down heels and fight.
Do you remember when we used to spread freedom and liberty to the rest of the world, and now we're spreading progressivism?
Yeah, and they see it and they hate it.
Isn't it wonderful?
That's the best part, is they hate American progressivism. It's a sickness to them.
Too bad Americans don't.
Yeah, no shit, right? All right. So anyway, like we usually do on this program, we like to end on a high note. So here we go. As anyone who has ever spent time there can tell you, Chicago is called the Windy City for a good reason. In winter, when there's a stiff breeze blowing off Lake Michigan, pedestrians often feel more like popsicles than people, making getting in out of the bitter cold a priority. But when your job is strictly outdoors, staying warm and toasty isn't an option. Unless someone comes to your rescue, that is. Chicago restaurateur Robert, and I'm going to butcher this, and I just don't know how to pronounce it because there was not one given, but I'm going to say it anyway. Maguette was driving across town one morning when he spotted a shivering tamale vendor braving the frigid January temperatures. On the spur of the moment, he decided to make her an offer she couldn't refuse. rather than let the woman, who was wearing so many layers of clothing she looked like a big tamale herself, turn into a tamale popsicle, he bought out her entire day's supply, close to 10 dozen tamales, gave her a big tip, and sent her on her way. After she'd gratefully gone home, he loaded up the copious quantities of tamales he'd purchased and distributed them to some of Chicagoland's homeless population. Pleased with the outcome of the morning's events, he took to Facebook to see if he could continue the trend. Anybody know of any tamale cart vendors that will be out this weekend in the cold weather? I went to Yolanda near Humboldt Park and bought her out so she could go home today. I would love to do the same for other vendors and distribute the tamales to our neighbors experiencing homelessness. Let me know of any leads, please. In the following days, armed with suggestions, he bought up all the tamales from vendors at three different locations, and again, after generously tipping the sellers, whose trade had been severely curtailed by both the weather and the lockdown, he shared their wares with people in need. Helping the hungry in his community is nothing new for Maguette. Having seen firsthand the devastating impact of the coronavirus pandemic had on his own industry, he feels lucky to be in a position to provide much-needed relief for those struggling to put food on the table. After opening a Love Fridge community pantry outside his Takuria Cochina restaurant this past June, he teamed up with owners of Fatso's Last Stand and Jack and Ginger's restaurant to prep and deliver 1,300 Thanksgiving meals for the needy. But he wasn't through. After Christmas, he partnered with Jason Vincent, owner of Logan Square Eatery Giant, to provision and man a food truck serving breakfast and lunch to the homeless. Next, he reached out to his friend Taylor Hammond, owner of the Stop Along, a Bucktown pizzeria, to ask if he'd be willing to donate his kitchen once a week to help ease food insecurity for families in need. Knowing how much kids love pizza, Hammond readily agreed. It's like, I have a restaurant, I have food, I know people who have restaurants and food. Let's help people who need food. He plans to continue his tamale runs for the remainder of the winter. Pizzas are still on the table as well. If somebody in our neighborhood is struggling, we all struggle, he said. I'm not trying to save the world. I'm just trying to help people who need food. If I have the ability to go help somebody, I'm just going to go help somebody. To me, it's literally that simple. The food he collects will be distributed to several Love Fridges locations around town, Breakthrough Urban Ministries in East Garfield Park, and to Franciscan Outreach's homeless shelter in North Lawndale. Now, if you want to make a donation, and you know I don't do this kind of thing very often, they can take donations to Zelly at the Venmo account is at Takora or Takoria, Takorea Cocina, Cocina, all one word. That's Takorea Cocina. And I can't imagine many more things that are worthwhile to give your time and efforts to. So congratulations. And, you know, that's what it's about, folks. Just reach out and help somebody in need. You may only be able to help one person, but that's one more that doesn't need help. That's the show. If you like it, tell your friends. If your friends like it, you need new ones. But they and you are welcome right here with me every week on KLRN Radio for the Conservative Curmudgeon Show. I'm your host, The Grouch. Peace.
I hate this place. Nothing works here. The medications don't work. I've been here for 7 years.
Here's the worst. Here's the love. All the times that we messed up. Here's to you. Feel the-
to us.